This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, radio for people.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Berlinski.
And Jennifer Renee.
Deborah Bell.
J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
And Glenn, we have a rockin' New Year's Eve. Tell us what's going to be on tonight's program.
Well, Sally Huffer from MCC will be joining us to talk about support groups and some new stuff that's going to be going on at MCC in the coming year, and also talking about making and keeping resolutions. And we're going to be talking about the raising of voices, a vigil and speak out against hate crimes. And then also, from This Way Out, Steve Pride is going to be reviewing 2007's big and small screen standouts, and that's on his Pride on Screen 2007. And then, of course, in the second hour, J.D. Doyle will have Queer Music Heritage, actually an encore presentation from June 2004, Queer Music Before Stonewall. And this was a program that won an award from the National Federation Community of Broadcasters.
So we're going to have a little segue here.
We're going to talk about people coming to the station to join us for some goodies.
Okay. So, yeah, we have...
chocolate-covered
pretzels.
Chocolate-covered pretzels.
We're minus a headphone, and J.D. was trying to listen through the microphone. No, J.D.
Yes.
been around long enough
so cute.
To know that that's not the way it works. But we're having a little early New Year's Eve celebration, and we invite you to come on down to 419 Lovett Boulevard and share in some non-alcoholic libations. Can they be libations if they're non-alcoholic? Oh, sure they can. And we have some goodies to snack on, and you can come by and see the station and meet some of the cool voices.
They can actually see us. Meet us in person.
Well, they might want to see you because you look quite dashing tonight. Not dashing.
Dashing?
Dazzling.
Thank you so much.
When you were a boy, you would have been dashing. Now you're dazzling.
Thank you so much.
Yes. And we have with us one of our favorite guests, the perennial, the constant, the ongoing Sally Huffer from Montrose Counseling Center. And she brought with her Jeremy...
Rutledge,
who's just a cutie pie if I ever saw one.
Jeremy's the... And I have to apologize because I've lost my voice.
Oh, you sound sexy. That husky
that
voice,
husky Sally. Voice, hey.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll try to keep your talking as minimal.
Well, I just wanted to introduce Jeremy is the pastor of Covenant Church, which is a ecumenical liberal Baptist
congregation.
Wait a minute. Some of those words don't go together there.
I couldn't...
You're too young to be a pastor.
It's a fun place, and it's an interesting place to be, and that we're happy to play host to the vigil that we'll be talking about, I think, in a
right.
moment.
Right. So where is the church?
The church is on Caroline Street. It's just north of the Holocaust Museum.
Oh, okay.
So Caroline and Wichita, essentially.
Uh-huh. Yeah, some people might be familiar because it has a labyrinth out in front. It's an amazing place.
Uh-huh.
And it's beautiful. The architecture is gorgeous.
Okay. So anyone who... It's a welcome and reconciling and open congregation. It's everybody that's interested can come and...
Absolutely.
Worship there if they're interested.
And the church is open, a welcoming and affirming congregation, and so everybody is welcome regardless of sexual identity. And the church even practices marriage equality. We've been doing that for a couple of years. Stopped signing marriage certificates. So we do the same service of marriage for all of our members.
Cool.
All right.
Well, this is something, you know, that just like was new on the radar to me, that there was this vigil plan, the raising of voices, which is not only a vigil but a speak out about hate crimes. Why don't you tell us a little bit, Jeremy, about what this event will be?
Okay.
And when it will be.
I will. And I'll speak a little bit, and Sally, to spare your voice, but jump in when you want to. the raising of voices really is a response. We saw some hate crimes this year, and we're thinking about finishing 1 year and beginning a new year. The Kenneth Cummings case that I think people may have heard about. Kenneth was a man in Montrose who was picked up by someone, and he was killed by that person who cited religious reasons for killing him. And clergy did not speak out after this happened. There was a really appalling silence that followed this hate crime. And then I think a lot of us were completely surprised that this kind of hate is this close to us, is in Montrose, is in our neighborhood, is still this active in 2007 and as we go to 2008. So the vigil was meant for clergy and for laity and for all people of good faith to kind of join their voices and speak out against this kind of hate and really resolve ourselves in the year to come to work for more justice and equality and to practice religion of compassion and love. And that, I think, is our goal.
It's so abhorrent that anyone would use religion as an excuse to justify their homophobia. But here is the most graphic form. Now, admittedly, this individual may have had mental problems, right, and you know, confused his religion with other things, but it's not a new defense, so to speak. I'm doing quotes in the air like everybody can see that, but they, you know, they use it to justify their hatred or their own evil doings. And that's just not acceptable. Well, that's just not Christian.
Right. Well, I would agree with that. And Houston is so thick with religious voices. I think there are many of us who thought we really have to speak in a different voice to counter some of these really hateful messages. And
were there any of the religious people in the city say anything?
Not that I know of. Not that made it into the press. And part of our goal
did, we didn't hear
to
it.
Make it.
Yeah. Because I didn't either. I just thought maybe you might have some inside information that maybe someone did.
When this originally happened, which was in June and July of this last year, Mel White from Soul Force did speak out. You know, but mostly it was in, you know, written materials and that sort of thing.
You mean Ed Young didn't speak up against it?
Well, I know that Ray Hill and I had talked right around this time, because in August we had what's going to be now an annual event on National Night Out, which is our hate crimes vigil, and where we remember those that have been targeted for bias-related crimes. And at the Counseling Center, we have a couple of programs. You know, we have the hate crimes program, where if somebody is the target of a hate crime, we can get an advocate to be with them. If they need medical care, we can get them to a hospital. We can get them to the police to fill out a police report. But what we see so often is that when people are targeted for a hate crime, they don't talk about it and they don't report it. And just recently in the Chronicle...
Is the door of the closet a big reason for that?
Well, for some people, it can be. But when I say that people don't report hate crimes for a number of years, that crosses all hate crimes, whether it's race, religion, sexual orientation, gender identity, any type of hate crime. People generally don't come forward for services. But, I mean, as a case in point, that young man who was, you know, brutally beaten with the swastika carved, the young man from Spring, you know, and the horrible stuff that he had to go through, there was really no denying that, you know, he encountered this horrible, you know, brutal attack. And when he was released from the hospital, so many people said, hey, do you need some help? Can we help you? What about, you know, seeing a therapist? And he kept saying, no, I don't need one. No, I don't need one. Well, you know, when you're 16, do you have the tools to deal with something like that? A lot of people, their first response is to turn inward. And unfortunately for this young man, he had been branded not just, you know, physically, as which he had been, but everybody knew him.
Right.
And he didn't want to always be known as that guy.
Right.
Well, if you take that and you put that also to somebody in the gay community, if you're the target of a hate crime and it's based on sexual orientation, that means that if you're going to claim you were assaulted based on hate, and this means that, you know, at any time during the attack, somebody may have used gay slurs, that sort of thing, that means that your sexual orientation becomes part of the, you know, the public
record.
And so you have to keep that in mind. Are you going to report it as just a regular assault, or are you going to report it as a hate crime? And that's a decision that only the survivor can make.
Yes. And it's very hard, because sometimes it's out of fear of retaliation, or people don't realize that those services are there. They really don't know that there's a hand to take theirs and say, come, we can show you the resources, we can help you. Or they think it's going to cost.
Or there's internalized homophobia. Did I deserve this because I was at a gay bar? You know, I mean, Some people get that message. And so I think that it's important for people like Jeremy and others in the community, people who probably see people on a regular basis who have experienced religious abuse, and to be able to say, hey, that's not our message. You know, we're here for you. We don't want you to deal with that internalized homophobia. We can help you find acceptance within yourself. And then also to be able to say, and we don't support what happened.
Right.
You know, this person used, you know, religion as the reason behind what he did to Kenneth Cummings. But, you know, as someone, for a community of faith, to be able to say, we don't support that. We don't believe that that's what you know, our religion is teaching.
Right. And so this is called the Raising of Voices. It's going to take place when?
It's taking place this Sunday at 4 p.m., and it will be outdoors. It'll be about a half-hour vigil, outdoors on the Labyrinth at Covenant Church, which is 4949 Caroline Street, just near the Holocaust Museum, and 4 p.m. this Sunday. I do want the listeners to know as well, we hope that everyone can join us. Even if you can't join us, I do want people to know that clergy are speaking out on this issue. And just among the Christian clergy, although it will be an interfaith gathering, there will be Methodists, there will be Baptists, there will be United Church of Christ, there will be Lutherans, there will be Catholics.
Unitarians.
There will be Unitarians.
There's
got to
be some Unitarians.
There will be several Unitarians. And people of many different backgrounds coming to speak out. And I hope that the community will know that.
Yeah, well, it's when the community, when we as a society raise our voices and say, this is not acceptable, that change happens. We've been talking with Jeremy Rutledge. He's the pastor at Covenant Church. And give that address again.
4949 Caroline Street. Again, just north of the Holocaust Museum.
Do you have a website?
It is. We do. It's just covenanthouston.org.
And then Sally Huffer with Montrose Counseling Center. And we've got a couple of things we want to cover. First of all, some of the programs that the Counseling Center has, especially I think some new groups but they're starting up again,
right,
for another cycle. And then also we wanted to talk a little bit about the favorite subject of the night, making resolutions and keeping them.
You're right.
So what's new at the Counseling Center?
Well, the biggest thing that's coming up, we do have, and I don't have all of the details finalized yet, but We're going to have a support group for lesbians with breast cancer, and that's something that we haven't had for a long time.
Is it people with breast cancer or survivors, or both?
Both. Both will be welcome to participate in this group. And as I say, I don't have all of the details just yet, but we'll probably be issuing that information coming up. We're also going to open another HIV support group, but then also coming up in... On January 17th, the coming out support group starts up again. So if it's your resolution this year to come out to people or to come out to more people, because we look at coming out as an ongoing
it's a lifelong process.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always like to tell people, you may be out to your family, but are you out to your cousins? Are you out to your, you know, grandparents, that sort of thing? Or maybe you're out at work. And that's great, but are you out at church? Are you out to your family? What about when your dentist says, hey, how was your weekend? Do you disclose to your dentist, well, my partner and I went on a cruise? You know, I mean, so there's always that decision about coming out and disclosing that kind of information. And so in the coming out support group, we deal with a lot of things like religious abuse, coming out, the different steps of coming out. But we also talk about healthy relationships and that sort of thing.
So you can be of any age and any stage of the coming out process and be welcome at that group.
Right. It meets on Thursday evenings at Montrose Counseling Center in our new building at 401 Brannard Street.
She likes getting that in, you know, that new building on the second floor.
On the second floor, yes.
With hopefully soon the first floor to become a community activity space.
Oh, I can't even tell you how excited I am about the first floor. The first floor, when it's built out, is going to be dedicated to the community. And we can talk about that more.
When we get closer to it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So. And then I think you were telling me there's going to be a group for men with prostate cancer, and that is... Did I say that right?
Prostate.
I can't that's boy stuff, you know.
I used to worry about that.
No, well, she don't have to anymore.
But yes, there are it's an ongoing group, but we only have two participants right now, and so we need to get the word out for people in the gay community. This is specifically for gay men who have had or are dealing with issues surrounding prostate cancer. Now, there are prostate cancer support groups that meet that are not gay specific, but I can just only imagine, you know, because when we're dealing with prostate cancer and then, you know, the follow up to that is a lot of, you know, what is their sexual ability going to be following the cancer? And a lot of men, if you're a gay man, can you talk about that openly in a support group if, you know, you're dealing with the gay community? It's a completely different community.
And just dealing with illness of any form. I mean, you just...
Well, sure, but... I mean,
it's nice to be able to talk to people who... I know with some things I've dealt with, even just being online and talking to other people dealing with the same thing, I've learned more than I sometimes did through the medical...
True, but if the whole slant of the recovery process... and recuperation is, and how are you going to satisfy your wife? That's a little skewed for our community. Same is true for the breast cancer for lesbians support group that we're putting together. Dealing with the psychosocial, you know, psychological issues around having a mastectomy or going through this is, you know, hard enough. Let alone if you were stuck in a support group where everybody was talking about what their husbands thought about losing their breasts.
Yeah.
And so, you know, sometimes having a group that is specifically for this community is very important so that people can move toward healing.
So give the website, phone number, and all that.
Well, and especially because tonight, speaking of, and I know this wasn't really on our list, but because tonight is New Year's Eve, and because people are probably going to be out there celebrating, and some people might be home alone and choosing to take part in drugs or alcohol because they're lonely or that's how they're trying to cope through the holidays. Maybe they've lost somebody or so forth. We have chemical dependency programs that are specific to GLBT only. And why is that important? Again, it's because somebody in a regular AA meeting or somebody in a regular traditional model may censor himself or herself instead of being able to be open and honest and say, hey, you know, I started drinking when I was 15 because my parents weren't going to accept me. I knew who I was, or I told somebody I had a crush on him, and, you know, it was my best friend, and he beat me up, and so I've been dealing with this since I was 15, or, you know, whatever. When I came out, you know, the only place to go was the bars to meet people, and so I just started drinking. Those kinds of things, you know, in the gay community, we all nod and say, And if that person were in another chemical dependency treatment program, they may not talk about what their personal experiences are and what triggers their drinking and drugging. And so we have these specific programs that are only for the GLBT community.
Well, just remember, you can have a heck of a good time without drinking and drugging. And just once again, the phone number and website for the Montrose Counseling Center.
Sure. The phone number is 713-529-0037. And I'm going to repeat that because I heard my voice squeak in the middle of it. 713-529-0037. And our website is www.MontroseCounselingCenter.org.
Thank you, Sally Hoffer. And, well, we went so long talking about so many things that we didn't get to that resolution part. So I'm just going to go over this rather quickly. This comes from Adam Clark, and he's a life coach in the United Kingdom, and you can find out more about him on Planet Out. And he says that we can make 2008 the year where we take control of our life and bring about lasting change. And his approach to resolutions is to work backwards rather than thinking of what I'd like to change in the beginning of the year. I imagine in what ways I'd like my life to be different at the end of the year. And we know the big thing that's going to be different about our lives at the end of 2008 is that it will no longer be in a Bush administration. And I think most of us are celebrating tonight because it's the countdown towards that.
Some of us aren't commenting about political issues.
So often we start the new year with good intentions. And, you know, we're going to give up smoking, eat healthier, stop wasting hours online. But for most of us, you know, after we, the beginning of the year, we kind of dwindle, and we might keep going for a while, but then we run out of energy, and then we just, it's too much effort, or we slip back into our old ways. So Adam suggests that we be kind with ourselves and to be realistic. Starting with the end of the year in mind, ask yourself, what is it that you really want to change? Whom do you want to be, and what do you want to be doing to make your life more fulfilled? Let these thoughts lead you to make resolutions that you'll end up keeping. And here are five tips. I always said just make one, one resolution. There, but be specific. The more precise you can be about what you want to achieve, the better. For example, if you want to cut down the amount of times you go out, it's better to say, I want to go out only once a week, than I want to go out less. Again, it would be better to say, I want to have three good friends than I want more of a social life. Use milestones. If you have a target weight in mind for the end of December, what does that mean you should weigh at the end of February, in April, and June? Having milestones allows you to track your progress. And that feels really good. If you know, if you say, oh, I need to lose 50 pounds. That is just, you know, too
much. Don't get personal.
You know what, I gotta tell you, I'd be happy if that's all I had to lose.
Yeah. But say, I'm gonna lose 5 pounds by the end of March. And then suddenly that becomes something that's more realistic and manageable. Use your imagination. Try to imagine your life as you'd like it to be at the end of 2008. Find a comfortable place to relax and use your mind's eye to see how much detail as possible as you'd like for your life to be. In your imagination, how do you come across to those around you? What is your bearing and demeanor? Use this image of your life as you would like it to be to inspire you to move forward and change. And as Gandhi said, be the change you want the world to be.
Mm-hmm.
Preserve, keep going. Don't let one setback puts you off. If you've managed 2 months without smoking, then have a cigarette. Don't indulge the fantasy that you're back where you started. You've had 2 months as a non-smoker. Look at that time and draw lessons from it rather than beating yourself up about the lapse. So just because you have one cigarette doesn't mean you start having a whole pack or, you know, right back to
whatever. One relapse is not a, you know, crisis. Or
right. And act. Action is the key to success in all spheres of life. As Paulo Coelho, one of today's most influential writers, says, as soon as you decide to confront a problem, you realize that you are far more capable than you thought you were. Hold on to this hope. Act and see what inner resources you discover to draw on. And that's your... is, you know, part of the AA tradition, is you have to admit you have a problem. So once we've admitted we have a problem, then we confront it. And those are some tips from Adam Clark. He's available. You can send emails to him at pnohealth@planetoutinc.com. You're listening to Queer Voices. What's up in our second hour, Glenn?
Well, coming up in the second hour, we're going to do a special replay from J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, June 2004, and it's called Queer Music Before Stonewall. And this was a program that J.D. won an award for from the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. And coming up next from This Way Out, we're going to have Steve Pride reviewing 2007's big and small screen standouts in what he calls Pride On Screen 2007. But first this.
Guess there's no use in hanging around. Guess I'll get dressed and do the town. I'll find some crowded avenue, though it will be empty without you. Can't get used to losing you, no matter what I try to do. Gonna live my whole life through loving you. Some guy I used to know, after I heard him say hello, couldn't think of anything to say. Since you're gone, it happens every day. Can't get used to losing you, no matter what I try to do. Gonna live my whole life through loving you. I'll find somebody way to see. Who am I kidding? Only me. 'Cause no one else could take your place. Guess that I am just a helpless case. Can't get used to losing you, no matter what I try to do. Gonna live my whole life through loving you. I can't get used to losing you, no matter what I try to do. Loving you.
JD, that sounds like 1962 to me.
It Was 62. I love that song. Andy Williams had a big hit with it in 62, one of his biggest, but I like the version Cam Clark did. He gave it gay lyrics, and that's from his 1999 album, Inside Out, and I wish you all Happy New Year.
This is Queer Voices.
So what were the best gay and lesbian films of 2007?
Ever tried to get bloodstains out of a silk shirt? Nightmare.
If I wanted something like this to happen, I would have had a one-night stand with another woman, not a straight man.
Coma stays far from disaster, safe and slow.
And how did we fare on TV?
Suddenly he's the hottest guy in the room, and I'm not good enough.
Happy 2008 and welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. The global struggle for LGBT equality in 2007 was also reflected in the movies and on television. We'll catch up on the latest news of that continuing struggle when our news wrap crew returns from their holiday break next week. But now, This Way Out's award-winning entertainment reporter Steve Pride recalls some of the queer moving images that moved him most during the past 12 months with his Pride on Screen 2007.
Hello, I'm Steve Pride, and welcome to a special Pride on Screen edition of This Way Out. Sit back, relax, and butter your popcorn while we examine the best LGBT images on screens both big and small for the year 2007. Despite predictions following the monetary and critical success of Brokeback Mountain, there wasn't much going on in the gay tent at this year's Cinematic Rodeo. Before we get to the top 10 theatrical releases, let's take a look at the increasingly important role of the small screen. In my opinion, there were a trio of truly significant events on American television in 2007. The first was an increase in the quality of regular gay storylines overall, and a real water over the dam year on ABC. The already inclusive Desperate Housewives added new gay neighbors.
I'm Susan. I live next door.
Oh, hi. I'm Lee's partner, Bob.
Oh, your partners. What kind of business? You know, whatever it is, just don't let the Neighborhood Association hear that you work out of your house. They're so not cool.
Actually, we're life partners.
Oh.
And we found out Lynette has a gay stepdad.
I didn't leave your mother because she cheated on me. I left because I'm gay.
Ugly Betty's show-tune-loving, fashion-obsessed nephew, Justin, continued to show audiences an effeminate teen whose family loves him unconditionally.
Justin, I need to talk to you for a second.
I better get ready for work.
I have a big surprise for you. Guess who's coming to Thanksgiving dinner?
Martha Stewart? I won the contest.
Martha Stewart? No. Your father.
And uber-gay Mark found love with an everyday gay.
Oh my God, it's happened. You're looking past the outside and seeing what's on the inside.
Kevin Walker found lots of love on Brothers and Sisters, and Dirty Sexy Money debuted with the first transsexual character on television to be played by a real-life transsexual actress, Candace Kane.
If I say something, don't get mad, okay?
Okay.
I think that you should run. You should embrace what he wants for you and win. Go even further than the old trip darling ever dreamed of.
I like the sound of that.
Doing what he wants today is the only way that you might be able to do what you want tomorrow.
And ABC Family, once best known as the channel where 700 Club founder Pat Robertson called for meteor strikes on gay parades, finally began to live up to their slogan, a new kind of family. Their series, Greek, introduced one of the few gay African-American characters on television.
There are certain things you just have to accept about yourself. I'm good at table sports, and I just suck at hockey.
Yeah. I'm gay.
Right. Oh. Yeah.
The second, TV milestone of 2007 came on CBS when Luke Snyder and Noah Mayer got together on the daytime drama As the World Turns.
I'm not mad at you.
Then why do you keep treating me like I've got the plague? I mean, do you just not like me?
No. I like you, Noah.
Then why do you keep pushing me away?
Because I like you, Noah. Yeah. Like that.
Luke and Noah eventually shared the very first same-sex on-camera kiss on daytime television. My third TV milestone of 2007, and perhaps the most unexpected, came via a British sci-fi series.
I believe the 21st century is when it all changes, and you gotta be ready.
Russell T. Davis, creator of the original Queer as Folk, surprised everyone when he relaunched the classic Doctor Who in the UK. And he admits that as a gay writer, it's often impossible to hide his queer sensibility.
I think you could look at my work, 14 years ago on a soap opera, and point to it and say, yes, that man's gay.
Thanks to the availability of the BBC America cable channel, the US had the benefit of his genius, not only via Doctor Who, but its amazing spin-off, Torchwood, which boasts not just a queer sensibility, but the dashing leader of the alien-fighting Torchwood team, Captain Jack Harkness, a frisky bisexual.
I might have to leave before the night is over.
Well, I'll make the most of now.
Captain Jack is portrayed by openly gay heartthrob John Barrowman, best known in the States for going night and day with Kevin Kline's Cole Porter in the film DeLovely. Torchwood is revolutionary. And don't get me started about the episode when Toshiko slept with a lesbian alien, or the one when Owen snuck into Jack's office to sniff his old coat, or when Jack traveled back in time and slow danced, then made out with a hot American soldier, or Jack.
So, you don't want to miss a week of This Way Out's global news reports, being introduced to terrific new music by openly LGBT artists, hearing about a new hit movie even before the buzz begins. The answer is a subscription to This Way Out. You can have our programs on CD or audio cassette delivered right into your mailbox, and for much less than the cost of a newspaper subscription. For easy how-to information, just log on to thiswayout.org or email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us for more information at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California 90038, USA.
Hello, I'm Richard Ganung from the film Parting Glances, and you are listening to a very special Pride on Screen with a look at the best LGBT films of 2007, only on This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all our sexually diverse communities.
So what's the big story on the big screen? If you didn't live in a big city or near an adventurous multiplex, there was far from a queer movie motherlode. But luckily, there was some gay gold among the pebbles in the pan. So what are my top 10 gay and lesbian films of 2007? Number 10, East Side Story.
You idiot! Can't you see that my nephew's gay? Let go of me! Oh!
Come here.
Let go! You know what? You should be thanking me.
That was my secret. All right, how would you like it if I told him you've been in an orgy? Huh?
A four-way is not an orgy. And besides, what's wrong with being gay?
Jesus. What, are you kidding me? How could you even be asking me that in this neighborhood?
East Side Story moves us into the same neighborhood as last year's Quinceanera. And while not nearly as accomplished, it still has plenty of curb appeal. And writer-director Carlos Portugal has built it on a solid comedic foundation.
East Side Story is a comedy about a very closeted Latino neighborhood in Los Angeles and what happens when the lead, who's this really good-looking young Latino guy, is outed by his aunt, and he has to deal with being a gay man and the Latino culture. And at the same time he's dealing with this, there's like all these fabulous gay white men that are moving into the neighborhood and starting to identify the Latino neighborhood. So there's a lot of culture clashes, and it's a very warm-hearted comedy, I guess is the best way to describe it.
Number 9, Camp Out, the award-winning documentary about 10 Midwestern teenagers attending the first occasion of the Naming Project Summer Camp in August of 2004.
Is it spiritual camp or is it Jesus camp? Because there's a difference.
Jesus camp.
Dude, I don't think it's going to be like
Like, Jesus!
It's just funny.
Like, in your face! Exactly. Ram it down your throat, honey!
Jesus! I agree with a lot of the principles and stuff. You know, I think Jesus was probably a really awesome guy. And right now, I'm just like, you know what? I'm taking a break. Maybe I'll go back to it later. Maybe I won't, you know? I mean, I'm totally open to going to camp with there being that Christian aspect to it. Maybe I'll find something I like.
Camp Out is a subtle, affecting look at the emotional intersection of religion, sexuality, and puberty. Number 8. Amnesia, the James Brighton Enigma. Amnesia is the sort of true tale of a young man trying to reconstruct his identity after being left naked and beaten in a Montreal parking lot.
Votre nom, s'il vous plaît? Comment vous vous appelez, monsieur? Do you understand what is your name?
I don't know.
Laissez pas, madame, il n'y a rien à tirer.
What city am I in?
You're in Montreal, Montreal.
It's in Ontario, right? Canada?
Hi, I'm Denis Langlois. I'm the director of Amnesia, the James Brighton Enigma. Well, it's based on the true story that happened in Montreal in 1998-99. A guy who woke up naked in amnesiac in old Montreal, and the only thing he remembered was his name. He thought his name was James Brighton, and he also remembered that he was gay. And it kind of it stuck with me. That story was very fascinating, but it was also appealing to me. Because it was actually a very sad story. That guy stayed in Montreal for 3 months and nobody was claiming him at all, so I thought that was very touching.
Number 7. Fat Girls. In this low-budget comedy made when he was only 20 years old, actor, director, writer-producer Ash Christian plays Rodney, the gay son of fundamentalist Christians.
Do you have any idea what you want to do?
I want to move to New York and star on Broadway.
Oh, honey. Don't you think you'd be better off going to school, learning a trade, so you could make a living and support a family?
Well, I don't really want a family.
Really?
No.
Then what do you want?
I want a boyfriend.
Oh!
His best friend is Sabrina, the overweight daughter of two lesbian moms. And her boyfriend, Rudy, is a Cuban refugee adopted by black parents.
Well, it's probably half autobiographical, I'd say.
Actor, director, writer, producer Ash Christian.
I came out to my father. I didn't really mean to. He's from the Bible Belt and a real Southern Baptist Republican type. And the story came out on the front page of the Dallas Morning News. Like, Fat and Gay was the title. And my face. So that was during the Tribeca Film Festival last year. And we haven't really talked about it. Really unhealthy.
I mean, you made Fat Girls before coming out to him?
Yeah, I did. I mean, he's not really involved in my world, so.
And he didn't know you were fat before?
I knew I was fat, just not gay. But, I mean, why didn't he know I was gay? It was sort of obvious throughout my whole life. Which I'm cool with. I mean, you know, I've always been the theater boy. I was destined to be gay from the beginning. From being born.
Number 6. Puccini for Beginners. Writer-director Maria Magenti's last film was the incredibly true adventure of Two Girls in Love, which has become a lesbian classic. In Puccini for Beginners, she pushes the sexual boundaries of the love triangle to hilarious effect.
Puccini is an absolutely universal love story. It's about that problem everyone deals with, what to do when you have two lovers. It is about a woman who falls in love with a man and then falls in love with a woman and starts seeing them at the same time and finds out that the two of them are ex-boyfriend and girlfriend.
They can't be exes.
Break it off right now. You've got to get out of there before this turns into a total calamity.
Oh my God, if things can get this bad in New York City, imagine what it's like in a small town. Then again, New York City is a small town.
What inspired it? My life. I don't really have any imagination whatsoever, so if my life is boring, I'm not making anything, and when things get exciting, I immediately have a story. With two girls, I was still in my late 20s, still not over my very first girlfriend, and that's what stimulated the story, Incredibly True Adventure. It was really based on me and my first girlfriend, and that amazing experience of saying I love you for the first time and thinking it's the last time you'll ever say it, because you usually don't stay that stupid, you know? Puccini, which took 7 years to make, not by choice, but that's how long it took, was indeed about an experience I'd had, which is that I'd been a lesbian and, you know, not a quiet one, a kind of a loud-mouthed, active one for many, many years, and I fell for a guy, and my life got turned upside down. So I decided to use that. This is the screwball version. My life wasn't exactly the screwball version of that.
Number 5, Colma, the musical.
Maybe, maybe this time I can leave all on my own. Maybe I have a reason to finally step forth and feel fully grown. What is it I'm hanging on to here in Colma? I think I know that's nothing. Everything all at once.
I'm H.P. Mendoza. I wrote the screenplay, wrote the music, and starred in Colma the Musical. I was living in Philadelphia at the time, and every year would get a gift from my best friend who was still living in Colma. I normally would get him a video game, but I was so broke, so I said, you know, he's a musical theater act. I'll just make a cute little joke. I'll make a song about Colma. And then I wrote 2, and I ended up making 10. It became this musical about us growing up, and I called it Colma the Musical, but it was never meant to be seen. It was a concept album.
Then H.P. bumped into an old friend he hadn't seen in nearly 12 years, budding director Richard Wong.
Hi, I'm Rich Wong, and I directed Colma. We started talking again. He's like, hey, man, you want to hear this song? And I was like, dude, you know, how much do you think it would cost to make this a movie? And from that moment on, we were moving forward with making the movie.
Number 4, The Bubble, is another masterwork from outgay Israeli writer-director Etienne Fox, who brought us Yossi and Jagger in 2002 and Walk on Water in 2004. The Bubble follows the painful odyssey of a gay Palestinian who's in the closet in his Hamas-friendly hometown, but out as an undocumented visitor to Tel Aviv, where he falls for an Israeli record store clerk. The Romeo and Juliet tinged affair blossoms in the protective bubble of Tel Aviv's East scene, which, according to Etienne Fox, is extremely queer-friendly.
Israel is an amazing place because it's, on the one hand, it's very tough and closed and pressed in many ways. But on the other hand, you have, you know, this amazing gay scene or gay life in Tel Aviv, and you have nightclubs and bars and my movies and other movies and television series that have gay characters in them, and we were first to have these characters before Americans had them even, you know. So you say, how could this happen? It's full of contradictions and full of these dichotomies, you know. It's a crazy place, Israel.
And while I'd love to see Fox move to Hollywood and make Brokeback Mountain 2, there are good reasons that will never come to pass.
I did come to the States, and, you know, I met with different producers and production companies and agents and whatever, and it was interesting. You know, I like America. There are a lot of American films and filmmakers that I really think very highly of, but at some point I realized that, you know, I was lying to myself by thinking that I could become an American film director. Being Israeli, being Jewish, being gay, all these issues that are so important in my work and important to me were things that I had to hide or close in these drawers. Whenever I met these executives or producers, I'd have to say something like, well, I'm a film director, and what do you want? I can do anything or whatever, you know, instead of saying, listen, I have a story that is a love story between two men, Israeli and Palestinian, or two Israeli men, or it's a gay story, it's Israeli, or it's Jewish. All these things I had to hide, you know, inside me, and that felt very bad. And that's not what I'm here for. That's not why I want to make films. I think it's very important for people to tell their own stories. Like, you know, Almodovar, you know, Pedro Almodovar, he should tell his Spanish stories. And then eventually bring them as beautiful stories to America and hope that Americans will want to see them. And I want to do the same thing, you know, make my own, you know, small films back home and bring them over to show them to Americans. Hopefully Americans will want to see them, you know. And but not to try and become an American film director and make American films, you know. And then, you know, give up so much of, you know, who I am, you know, which is Hebrew and Israel and music that is my music and landscapes that are part of my childhood and childhood memories and all these things, you know. If you'd make a film, I would want you to make a film about yourself, you know, that has the foods you grew up on and the music you grew up on and your parents and your brothers and sisters and all these things. I wouldn't want you to make a movie about, you know, someone else or just a movie that is good for everyone, you know. And I'd want to see something very specific from you, you know, something that is really you. And I want to do the same thing with my stories and with my movies and with my, you know, world.
Someday he'll come along, the man I love, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love. And when he comes my way,
I'll do my best to make you stay.
Unfortunately, the realities of disputed geography and the violent politics of the region are never more than a checkpoint away. This movie broke my heart.
Hi, this is Tom Fitzgerald, writer-director of The Hanging Garden, Beefcake, The Event, and Three Needles. You're listening to a special Pride on Screen on This Way Out, the international radio magazine for all of our sexually diverse communities.
Number 3, Boy Culture.
I like watching the playful dance of the crews in pickup. A mating ritual more elaborate than anything on the Discovery Channel. Why do guys pass themselves around so freely? I mean, I have a lot of sex, but only if I'm being paid. I get something in return. You may think that's the lowest of low, but isn't it better than spreading for any smooth operator for a Bud Light and cab fare?
Q. Alan Braca's first film was a stop-action animation short featuring characters he made from Lego blocks. When I first met him, he still lived in an apartment without a kitchen and washed his few sad dishes in an ancient bathtub. Then came the cash cow, Eating Out, and the first sequel to an indie gay film, Eating Out 2, Sloppy Seconds. Based on the novel by Matthew Redmond, Boy Culture is the tragicomic dance of displaced desire as three roommates circle each other warily, uncovering layers of denial, lust, and maybe love.
I changed the race of one of the lead characters, of Andrew. In the book, Andrew is a white Midwestern country boy, and I turned him into a black video store clerk. For me, it was a great opportunity to do my own political agenda, which was just to represent queer people of color more. There's so few of them out there.
Number 2, For the Bible Tells Me So. Does God really condemn loving homosexual relationships, or is the Bible just an excuse to hate?
If homosexuals are allowed their civil rights, then so would prostitutes or thieves or anyone else.
Marriage cannot be severed from its cultural, religious, and natural roots.
The rancorous debate is part politics, part religion, part science. Is homosexuality a sin? Is it a choice?
It is sin because the Bible says so.
I've never seen a man in my life I wanted to marry. If one ever looks at me like that, I'm going to kill him and tell God he died.
God says in the Old and the New Testament that it's an abomination.
God calls it an abomination. It's an abomination.
Director Daniel Carslake brilliantly tackles this question in the critically acclaimed documentary For the Bible Tells Me So. According to his co-writer and co-producer, Helen Mendoza,
it started with a phone call from my good friend Daniel Carslake, the producer-director. We have been looking for a project to do together for a long time, and this just happened along the way. But the real journey with this film began with In the Life, the magazine on PBS. Dan convinced them to do their very first piece on religion. Up until that time, they had not been doing pieces on religion. So he interviewed a woman named Irene Monroe, who was also in our film. It aired on PBS. And Dan got an email a few days later from a young man in Iowa. It was 5 lines, and it said, "Last week I bought the gun. Yesterday I wrote the note. Last night I watched your show. And knowing that maybe someday I could walk into my church with my head held high, this morning I threw the gun into the river. My mother never has to know."
Nominated for the Grand Jury Prize at the 2007 Sundance Film Festival, For the Bible Tells Me So swept the audience awards at Outfest in Los Angeles, the Provincetown Film Festival, the Fresno Gay and Lesbian Film Festival, and the Seattle International Film Festival, to name just a few of its accolades. Without a doubt, the very best gay theatrical release of 2007 was a film made in 1986. My number one film is the restored classic, Parting Glances.
You've been together, what, 5 years?
More like 6. Met right after I got out of school.
You're going to be lonely.
Believe it or not, I've got worse things on my mind than Robert leaving.
Do tell.
Just other things.
You know, it's shocking, but Cecil's never even hinted to me that he knew what was going on with you two. And, of course, I always played naive because I didn't want to jeopardize Robert's position at work.
Seems impossible he wouldn't have figured it out.
Darling, you'd be amazed at what people can blind themselves to.
This year, the Outfest Legacy Project for LGBT Film Preservation, a partnership between LA's LGBT Film Festival organization, Outfest, and the UCLA Film and Television Archive, produced a complete restoration of Bill Sherwood's masterpiece, Parting Glances. The new 35mm print of the landmark film screened at Lincoln Center in New York City to standing room only in late October. Parting Glances marked the screen debut of a young New York City firefighter turned actor named Steve Buscemi, as well as actress Kathy Kinney, who 9 years later would shoot to fame as Mimi Bobek on The Drew Carey Show. For me, one of the highlights of the year was speaking with the openly gay star of Parting Glances, Richard Genong.
Obviously, working with and for Bill Sherwood, the writer and director, you would get such a mixture of things. A prime example is I had so many people come up to me this week and say their favorite scene is the scene with Michael and Nick on the bed, you know, where he confesses his true love to him. And I'll never forget that scene because Bill told me before we shot it, and the scene that you see in the film is... this is how it happened. He had come up to me and said, okay, Richard, basically you've screwed up every take so far. There is hardly any film in the camera. The sun is going down the window outside. I want that. We only have time for one more. I don't even know if we're going to get through the scene. Okay? And I want you to cry at the end. Okay? Go. And I was so pissed off at him. I was just so angry. But I just thought, you know, let it go. Let all of it go. And as an actor, sometimes God smiles at you, you know, when you're acting. I don't know where it came from. That scene still moves me.
It's my will.
Put it away.
Just find out where it is.
You know, France is
working on this new drug that we should get by the year 2000. Maybe we should go to France.
Okay.
We should have split when we first met, gone to Kentucky or something.
Wisconsin, Colorado, Virginia, you know, someplace in the Midwest. Settle down on a farm.
You last about 10 seconds on a farm.
Well, Robert's got the right idea leaving. You should get out, too.
Robert's an asshole leaving, and I'm not going anywhere.
Good, because if you ever left, I'd go clean out of my mind. You ripped from me, you jerk face.
I know.
Not fair. You've been in love a bunch.
Just once, really.
Yeah. Now he's gone, right?
It's right here.
To recap, my pick for the 10 best LGBT films released in 2007. East Side Story, Camp Out, Amnesia, The James Brighton Enigma, Fat Girls, Puccini for Beginners, Coma the Musical, The Bubble, Boy Culture, For the Bible Tells Me So, and the re-release of the restored print of Parting Glances. For more information on queer cinema, drop by my website, prideonscreen.com. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Steve Pride brought us Pride on Screen 2007, Sherry Lunn contributed additional program material, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on their link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special CD thank you gifts, too, including this program. You can also subscribe to CDs or audio cassettes of our weekly programs there. To sign up for our weekly email program information messages, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. All the best to you and yours in 2008, and thanks for listening on WCBN Ann Arbor, Michigan, Grateful Dread Radio, Baltimore, Maryland, to UUU, now Renew South Wales, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Make a resolution to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
The White Rose Coalition will take part in a demonstration at the Rose Parade in Pasadena, California on New Year's Day 2008.
Thousands of local and national pro-impeachment and pro-peace American citizens will stage nonviolent protests and demonstrations throughout the Rose Parade, beginning at 7:30 a.m. in Pasadena, California. The White Rose Coalition includes members of the Los Angeles National Impeachment Center, Code Pink, Troops Out Now Coalition, ANSWER, Progressive Democrats for America, and others. Tune in as part of the 50 to 80 million U.S. viewers and 500 million worldwide viewers take part in this historic protest. Go to bcimpeach.com for details or call 310-497-7255. That's bcimpeach.com or 310-497-7255. You're listening to 90.1 KPFT, Houston, Texas, Radio for Peace.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business. To make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. We'll arrange for your vehicle to be picked up and the title transferred. Then we'll send you a receipt for your tax deduction. It's that simple to support the station you've come to rely on for alternative music, news, and public affairs programming. Again, for more information or to make a donation, call our toll-free vehicle donation hotline at 877-308-2408. You're tuned in to commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio, KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Hey! Sing if you're glad to be gay. Sing if you're happy. This way.
Top of the magnificent Altoona Motor Hotel, overlooking the twinkling lights of the Magic City, the WQMH Network proudly presents the light and lilting sounds of your favorite music makers for your listening, dancing, and romancing pleasure. Good evening, America. This is Smiling Eddie Budisi, speaking of you from downtown Altoona, where we've got toe-tapping, hand-clapping, finger-snapping sweet melodies designed to help you forget the cares of the day. Music from one of the world's great motor hotels will soothe the savage beast, warm the heart, and tickle the toesies. Songs of love and laughter, joy and tears. Here, while the lights of the city shine below, we proudly offer you the music of yesterday. Singable, danceable music. And now, to get our program off and running, here are the soft and subtle sounds of Sam Lennon's Famous Players to remind us of when our hearts were young and gay.
Someday you'll come along, the man along, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love. And when he comes my way, I'll do the best to make him stay. He'll look at me and smile, I'll understand. And in a little while, he'll take my hand. And though it seems absurd, I know we both won't say a word. Maybe I shall meet him someday, maybe Monday, maybe not. Still, I'm sure to meet him one day. Maybe Tuesday will be my good news day. He'll build a little home, just meant for two, from which I'll never roam. Who would you? And so, all else above, I'm waiting for the man I love.
Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and I'm here on the fourth Monday of each month to bring you an hour devoted to our culture's music. That little bit of nonsense at the beginning was my way of getting you in the mood for a special journey on tonight's show. We're going to explore queer music before Stonewall. Regular listeners to this show will know that from time to time, I've slipped in a number of songs from prior to 1969, whether it be the blues of Ma Rainey or the campy big band music of the 20s and 30s, or even Noel Coward or Francis Fay. But tonight, I'm going to try to approach that in a more organized manner. Gay music, then and now, is a difficult genre to define.
Is it music by gay or lesbian artists? Is it music gay people listen to and adopt it as their own? And does it include those novelty songs that are the jokes at our expense? I'm covering all those areas, and a grouping I particularly love is what I'm calling cross vocals. You've already heard one example, as I started the show with a jazz band called Sam Lennon's Famous Players and their male-to-male version of The Man I Love from 1927. These are songs, for example, intended to be sung by a woman, but are instead sung by a man, keeping those pronouns intact. They sound pretty gay now, but are gay only in hindsight. Here's the explanation. In the late 20s and early 30s, music publishers had a stranglehold on the rights to their catalogs. Singers could not change a word, period. So it was not uncommon for a man to seemingly sing a song to a man, or a woman to a woman. The public knew of the restrictions on singers and did not really pay attention to any gay connotations. But today, we do, which makes these a lot of fun. That also explains my second example, from 1928, by none other than Bing Crosby. I just love the title of this song. It's called Ain't No Sweet Man Worth the Salt of My Tears.
Shaking like a leaf on a tree that's coming loose from the stem. Shaking like a leaf on a tree because I'm coming loose from my man. I'm like a weeping willow, weeping on my pillow. For years and years there ain't no sweet man that's worth the salt of my ba da da ba wa da ba da da ba da 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 wa da. Down and down he dragged me like a fiend he nagged me. For years and years there ain't no sweet man that's worth the salt of my ba da da ba da da da. Although I may be blue, still I'm through. I must tell him goodbye rather than have that man gonna lay me down and just die. So broken-hearted misters, aggravated misters, lend me your ears, there ain't no sweet man that's worth the salt of my ba da 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 ba da ba da da ba da ba da da ba da ba da ba da ba da.
You may have noticed by now that it was the style of many of the jazz band songs of those years to have long instrumental introductions before they ever got to the vocals. I'm skipping that intro for one of the few female examples of cross vocals. From 1936, here's Dolly Dawn and her Dawn Patrol singing Copper-Colored Gal.
Copper-colored gal of mine, I love you 'cause you're so refined. Will you be my little honey mine? Copper-colored gal of mine, you've done something to my heart. You've upset my apple cart. Tell me when the honeymoon will shine. Copper-colored gal of mine, oh gee, you're sweet as can be. Your ace is with me, and I mean ace is high. Me, oh my. You know why? Come on, honey, name the day. Wedding band is on its way. Life with you will be divine. Copper-colored gal of mine. Copper-colored.
And on to another major star singing a surprising song.
Some fellas like to tiptoe through the tulips. Some fellas go on singing in the rain. Some fellas keep on painting skies with rainbows. Some fellas go on singing down the lane. But I'm biding my time, 'cause that's the kind of guy I'm. While other folks go dizzy, I'll keep busy biding my time.
The song was called Biding My Time from 1943. And yes, that was Judy Garland. And yes, she said, that's the kind of guy I'm. Which gives us another example of pronouns being ignored. And also a chance to mention Judy Garland in another context. Like today, before Stonewall, gay men had their divas, and she was probably the ultimate diva for those years. Over in England in the 30s, the gay subtext of the music was perhaps more in the open, and I've got some prime examples. Noel Coward included a song in his 1933 musical Bittersweet that dealt with the gay life in the times of Oscar Wilde, where high society gay men reportedly wore green carnations.
Pretty boys, witty boys, too, 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 lazy to fight stagnation. Haughty boys, naughty boys, all we do is to pursue sensation. The portals of society are always opened wide, the world our eccentricity condones. A note of quaint variety we're certain to provide, we dress in very decorative tones. Faded boys, jaded boys, womankind's gift to a bulldog nation. In order to distinguish us from less enlightened minds, we all wear a green carnation.
We believe in art, though we're poles apart. From the fools who are thrilled by thrills, we like beers, we pinch our thrills. Women say we're too for to feel like a Jew. We smile wearily, it's so thrilling. Pretty boys, pretty boys, you may fear that of disintegration. Haughty boys, naughty boys, dear, 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 swooning with affectation. Our fingers seek and willow, we are living, calm and die, we worry the majority of things. But maidens rich and billowy invites out to die and revels in our phosphorus and gifts. Dated boys, come what may, our kids are inspiration. And as we are the reason for the 90s being gay, we all wear a incarnation.
I couldn't resist going from Coward's version to one from 1967 by Edward Earl and the Satisfactions. It was from a tribute album off-Broadway producer Ben Bagley put together. A more curious English song from 1934 was by Judd Rees, and in it he made no bones about explaining his song's title, The King's a Queen at Heart.
Now Patagonia's all a dazzle. There's excitement everywhere. The occasion's the coronation of the empire's gracious heir. The king's hussars, the palace guards, just hear their voices ring. They've gathered here to shout this cheer. The king is dead. Long live the king. Now there's much ado and hullabaloo since our new king's on the throne. He's turned out quite a sport with the men about the court. There's something queer about this peer, his actions most complex. The way he walks, the way he talks, makes me doubtful about his sex. When the courtier proudly announced, the foreign envoy from old Panama, the king got all fluttered as sub rosa he muttered, tell him 8 o'clock in the royal boudoir. His troops are a blazing of colour as they parade in the castle courtyards. From the swish of their stride, he has named them with pride the king's own homosexual guards. To suggest that the Spanish is more apropos than the mannish on a new conquest gives him a start. But he'll be gay till the end, till he's too old to bend, for the king's just a queen at heart. When he gets a bit gouty, the doctors find out he must rest and lie still without doubt. But it's tough lying dead on a royal double bed with such virile young interns about. With never a thought for affairs of the court, at one time he couldn't be found, till he was seen by a fluke trying to bargain a duke with the crown's biggest jewel on the ground. Now it's all right to teach the court sculpture, for he leans towards the old Grecian art. But what with hiding in niches and him minus his breeches, the king's just a queen at heart.
As you can see, that song had surprisingly blatant lyrics for those days, and Judd Rees was probably referring to King Edward VIII. Also in those years, the English seemed to love songs about fairies, with the most open one being Let's All Be Fairies from 1933 by the Durham Dance Band.
Once upon a time, there were two fairies. Now, there are a great many.
Do you believe in fairies and the stories that never grow old? There are fairies at the bottom
realm of the garden. That's the tale we've all been told. Let's think of the childhood days, then go back to our baby ways. And let's all be fairies.
Tinkle, tinkle, clash, clash, clash.
All dance around and go crazy, waving a buttercup and daisy. We'll go in the onesie,
on tiptoe we'll say dash dash.
Let's all be fairies.
Tinkle, tinkle, clash, clash, clash.
Ding dong, ding dong.
Fairy bells are gaily ringing.
Ding dong, ding dong.
Everybody's gaily singing, dancing down the moonbeam.
Da 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 da.
Hear our fairy footsteps. Whoop,
here we are.
Two great big burly boxers were engaged to appear in the ring. Said the slosher to the slogger, I won't hurt you if you don't hurt the old thing. When we're in the ring tonight, there's no reason why we should fight. So let's both be fairies. Tinkle, tinkle, clash, clash, clash. Don't get annoyed if I shove you. You can't imagine how I love you. We'll punch flimsy, flimsy. You go out when I say dash. Let's both be fairies. Tinkle, tinkle, clash, clash, clash.
Ding dong, ding dong.
Fairy bells are gaily ringing.
Ding dong, ding dong.
Everybody's gaily singing, dancing round the moonbeam. Da 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 da. Hear our fairy footsteps.
Whoops, here we are.
Whoops, here we are.
You have just heard Let's All Be Fairies.
That same year, Beatrice Lilly recorded her song about fairies. Now, she was raised in Toronto, Canada, so really wasn't British. But she moved there at age 20 and had great success in England. So here's her fairy song.
There are fairies at the bottom of our garden. Now, it's not so very, very far away. You pass the gardener's shed, and you just keep straight ahead. No, I do so hope they've rarely come to stay. There's a little wood with moss in it and beetles. And a tiny stream that quietly runs through. Oh, you wouldn't think they dare to come merrymaking there. But they do. Yes, oh, they do. There are fairies at the bottom of our garden. And they often give a dance on summer night. Oh, the butts of flies and bees make a charming little breeze, and the rabbits sit about and hold the light. Now, did you know that they could sit upon a moonbeam? Did you? And snatch a tiny star to make a fan, and dance way up there in the middle of the air? Oh, well, they can. Yes, oh, they can. Those fairies at the bottom of our garden. You cannot think how beautiful they are. They all stand up and sing when the fairy king and queen come lightly floating down upon their car. Now the king is very proud and very handsome. And the queen, well, can you guess who that may be? She's a little girl all day, but at night she steals away. Now this will kill you, I hope. Well, it's me. Yes, it's me.
Beatrice Lilly with her signature song, There Are Fairies in the Bottom of My Garden. She was a great friend of Noel Coward, who commented, I should love to perform There Are Fairies in the Bottom of My Garden, but I don't dare. It might come out, There Are Fairies in the Garden of My Bottom. The English weren't the only ones to indulge in this silliness. Over here, John Ryan proclaimed, "I wish I were a fairy."
We were seated round the table, all the boys and me, when someone popped the question, "What would you like to be?" I very often thought, if I could have my choice, I'd like to handle big things, for instance, change my voice. I wish I were a fairy pretty fairy. I'd swish around with all the greatest ease. I'd hide beneath the shadows, the very darkest shadows. Oh, goodness me, I'd be such a tease. If you were dark and handsome and asked me for advice, I'd wave my lovely wand at you, not once or twice, but thrice. I wish I were a fairy pretty fairy. Oh, gracious me, I know I'd love to fly. I wish I were a fairy, a proud and pretty fairy. I'd spend my time just hovering round your door. I'd watch your every movement. I'd go wherever you went. Whatever you would wish for, you'd get more. I'd change you to an apple and place you on the floor. I'd chew you up in little bits. I'd eat you to the core. Woo! I wish I were a fairy, a proud and pretty fairy. There are so many things I'd love to do.
From 1940, John Ryan's I Wish I Were a Fairy. In the 20s and 30s, there were a number of artists who performed as female impersonators. This had been a vaudeville tradition for decades. One very rare example was the duo Savoy and Brennan. Bert Savoy did his part of the act in drag and was pure camp on and off the stage. In their only recording, you can hear how convincing he plays the woman's part.
You know, I met
a fellow friend of yours this morning. How dare you talk to me? By the idea, I haven't given you the least bit of encouragement. By girly stateless
feet after 3 o'clock
in the morning.
Well, would you like to go for an automobile ride?
No.
No?
And just walking home from one.
Say, before we go any further, tell me, are you married or single or what is it?
Four. I'm not married anymore. I'm not married. It takes up so much time. I'm not married. You must come over.
Yes, but you have been married because I remember reading of your divorce.
Well, I'm not the only one that ever got a divorce. I just had to get a divorce. The caveman stuff don't go for knees earrings. Floors were made to walk on, not to be dragged over.
Yes, but it didn't last very long, did it?
Well, I was living for Native September. I don't see how people can say that. I was living for Native September.
And then some other woman took them away from you.
Why do I care? I had to use the last summer.
That was Savoy and Brennan, and the title, You Must Come Over, was one of the catchphrases in their act. In the early 30s, there was a brief phenomenon known as the pansy craze. Straight people would flock to the gay night spots to see the drag acts. Riding that wave was Gene Mallon. He began his career as a female impersonator and then donned a tuxedo when he became the most sought-after nightclub host in New York. He took his success to Los Angeles and was well known for hosting parties for Hollywood celebrities. He recorded one very rare record, and here's a little of both of the very gay sides. First is That's What's the Matter with Me, followed by I'd Rather Be Spanish Than Mannish.
Folks, this is really one of the duckiest songs that I ever sang, and I hope you like it. When people look at me and say, why does that fellow act that way? It's influence prenatal.
Prenatal?
Yes, prenatal. That's slowly growing fatal. My father hoped I'd be a boy.
What a disappointment.
A girl, my mother cried. And you can see when they got me, they both were satisfied. As far as I'm concerned, this thing is breaking up my life. I don't know whether I should take a husband or a wife. If I merely had just masculine desires, or if I only had the yearnings of a femme, in me you must admit the mannish sex is well defined. But when I see a football game, God, I nearly lose my mind. When I get mad just like a man, I'll battle.
Sweet.
When I take my kimono off, they flee. I think I know the reason things are not exactly right. My mother tried to get to Jersey on that fatal night. So 'twas on a ferry boat that I first saw the light. And that's what's the matter with me. When I look into a mirror, a big strong man I find. But when I see a battleship, I can't make up my mind. I don't know whether I'm Mr. I'm on the spot as you can plainly see. Before my birth, my mother had just flowers on her mind. The doctor who attended her was just so good and kind. And when he arrived, he brought the biggest pansy he could find. So that's what's the matter with me, that's all.
How do you do, my smart people? I am about to sing a song that I made famous at my nightclub. I also have my nightclub orchestra here with me, and as soon as the boys are ready, we'll begin. In fact, I think the boys are ready right now. Are you ready, boys?
Yes, Jimmy.
Please.
Now I am a Spaniard who's different. Yes, I am a Spaniard who's new. Oh, I'm a bull battler you never have met, and you never forget when you do.
Professional jealousy.
Each maiden is thrilled by one look at my pen. I'm handsome, I'm strong, I look just like a man.
Says you.
Says me.
When I keep my mouth shut, there's room for a doubt. But when I start talking, the secret is out.
A pansy.
You're telling me.
'Cause I'm Spanish, I'm so Spanish. All Christmas night am I Spanish. There's something about bulls that I cannot resist. I love to slap cows on the wrist. 'Cause I'm Spanish, I'm so Spanish. And I'd rather be Spanish than mannish. With picadors and matadors, I don't agree. The reason for this you can easily see. When they wave that red flag, I think they mean me. 'Cause I'm Spanish, but why bring that up? Oh, I'm Spanish.
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 Oh, tell us, water, I'm Spanish. If asked to fight cows, I would go on a strike. There's something about bulls that I like. 'Cause I'm Spanish.
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 If you're mannish, I'd rather be Spanish. I fought many battles, as you probably guessed. Many of the bulls I have met by request.
And how?
And when I met those bulls, well, say you know the rest. 'Cause I'm Spanish, why bring that up? Voila!
Again, that was Gene Mallon. I can't leave the 20s and 30s without talking about the blues artists, who were in their own way the most blatant and true to themselves. The blues from those years had a casualness toward sexuality, which often extended to homosexual behavior. And the classic example from 1928 is the song "Prove It On Me Blues" by Ma Rainey, often called the mother of the blues.
When I last night had a great big fight, everything seemed to go wrong. I looked up, to my surprise, the gal I was with was gone. Where she went, I don't know. I mean to follow everywhere she goes. Folks said I'm crooked, I didn't know where she took it. I want the whole world to know. They say I do it. Ain't nobody caught me. You got to prove it on me. When I was last night with a crowd of my friends, there must have been women, cause I don't like no men. It's true, I wear color and a tie. Make the wind blow all the while. But to say I do it, ain't nobody caught me. They sure got to prove it on me.
Ah, yes. Went out last night with a crowd of my friends. They must have been women, because I don't like no men. And on to Gladys Bentley. While she didn't sing about it, she was by far the most blatantly lesbian blues artist of that time. She would perform mostly in male attire, usually wearing a tux. Here's a little of her song, Red Beans and Rice.
Red beans and rice, greasy bacon in the pot. Red beans and rice, easy bacon in the pot. Cold bread in the oven, coffee on the stove, ain't hot. I don't get no chicken, ham and eggs would poison me. I don't get no chicken, ham and eggs would poison me. Why, he won't buy no sugar, just to sweeten his own tea. Walked to work this morning, cause I only had one dime. Walked to work this morning, cause I only had one dime. Wouldn't spend it on myself, spend it on that man of mine.
On the male blues front, while there were a number of songs about sissies, the only actual gay performer I found was Frankie Half Pint Jackson. Called Half Pint because he was only 5'2", Jackson often performed comedy songs and songs as a female impersonator. He took the role of a woman in the songs, providing lots of sexual double entendre, with songs like My Daddy Rocks Me with One Steady Roll. One of his songs I can play is called Be Your Natural Self.
There you go, flying around. What goes up must come down, so be your natural self. There you go, riding by. Don't you know you can get too high, so be your natural self. I was once in the money. Now my days ain't sunny anymore. There you go, bragging again. Don't you know your luck can end, so be your natural self.
While Jackson did female impersonation in his act, he was classified more as a vaudeville and blues singer. Up next is a true female impersonator, who was by far the most prolific recording artist of that genre. Up next is a true female impersonator, who was by far the most prolific recording artist of that genre. His name was Ray Bourbon, and he left a legacy from the 30s through the 60s of 78s, 45s, and LPs. He performed with Mae West on Broadway, and even did a show at Carnegie Hall. In the 40s and 50s, he recorded a series of albums on his own label. As you'll see, his style was more recitation than singing, and it was accented by his famous giggle. From the album, You're Stepping on My Eyelashes, here's I Must Have a Greek.
Sometimes I take a mental trip around the world and try to picture the perfect man I seek. But in my love parade, all other nations fade. I want to have, I gotta have, I have to have, I'm gonna have a Greek with cheek. Some girls I know are dying for a lay from Hawaii with a wiki-wacky waka-key physique. Some girls go completely jerky when they meet a thing from Turkey. But me, Greek. Other girls would give a million to bitch woo with a Brazilian or engage a Portuguese and hide a Sikh. But for rolling on a haystack or as a jockey on my racetrack, ha! Greek. Not a freak. If I should ever bask in an affair with an Alaskan, the heat would make the igloo spring a leak. And though they say the going's meaty, when you have a sweetie. Oh, Cora, just drag me in an old-tired, loused-up Greek. A Frenchman knows his angles, and a gypsy knows his bangles, and a Pole won't care what language you might speak. And a golden bronze Tahitian is nice, but not as Grecian as a thoroughly domesticated Greek. Ain't that the truth, girl? You know it's the truth. You know it. Now, in some parts of Italy, they do it rather wittily. But I never like spaghetti, so to speak. And the Swiss are small and cheesy. And the Eskimos are sneezy. Who the hell wouldn't rather have a Greek? Some girls can't help feeling skittish in the arms of someone British. On the other hand, some ladies go quite weak at the sight of a Scotsman kilted, and especially this kilt is tilted, but me, Greek. So unless your inclinations can stand on Greek foundations, you can peddle your papaya up the creek. I may weaken for a weak god, but he's gonna be a Greek god. I'm gonna have a Greek with cheek, not a freak.
Greek.
In the mid-50s, to capitalize on the news of Christine Jorgensen's operation, Ray changed the spelling of his name from R-A-Y to R-A-E and issued an album called Let Me Tell You About My Operation. It was all hype, though, and he milked it like the expert he was. Another renowned female impersonator was T.C. Jones, who in the 50s managed to appear in several movies and even on television on the Ed Sullivan and Steve Allen shows. He was famous for impersonating actresses like Tallulah Bankhead, Betty Davis, and in this sketch, Katharine Hepburn.
It was just one of those things, just one of those crazy things, like one of those bells that now and then rings. It was just one of those nights, just one of those fabulous lights. A trip to the moon, I'm gross singer. Got some of my wings, sorry, just one of those things. But if we thought a bit about the end of it as we started painting the town, paint. We've been aware that our love affair was too hot. It was a hot one, wasn't it? It was just one of those nights, just one of those fabulous flights. A trip to the moon, holy cow, jet propelled way up there was spent. Then way back down again. Now the calla lilies are in bloom again. Such a strange flower, suitable for any occasion. I wore them on my wedding day, and now I place them here in memory of something very beautiful that has died. Goodbye, Sebastian. So it's farewell in amen. Here's hoping we meet now and then. You are great fun, but you were just one of those things. Bravo.
That was from the T.C. Jones album from 1959 called Himself. And I've got one more singing drag queen for you. This time a very obscure one who moved from the U.S. to England and did sort of a comedy opera style. Here's Jean Fredericks from her 1964 album Recitals Are a Drag. Singing a title that's true no matter how you read it. The song is A Good Man is Hard to Find.
My man's treating me mean.
say. A good man is hard to find. You always get the other kind. Just when you think that he is your guy, you look for him and find him fooling round another gal. Then you wave, you even crave to see him laid in his grave. So if your man is nice, take my advice and love him in the morning. Kiss him every night. Give him plenty loving to read him right. For a good man nowadays is hard to find. A hard man is good to find. You always get the other kind. Just when you think that he is your shade, you look for him and find him fooling round the house and drag. Then you rave, you even crave to see him lay his grave. So if your man is nice, take my advice and love him in the morning, kiss him every night, give him loving, treat him right. For a good man nowadays is hard to find.
That was Gene Fredericks. Let's take a quick break to remind you that you are listening to Queer Music Heritage on KPFT, 90.1 FM in Houston. And this is a good time to encourage you to be sure to listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Saturday night from midnight to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's Queer Radio with Attitude.
We're three caballeros, three gay caballeros. They say we are birds of a feather. Amigos, no matter where he goes, so one, two, or three goes, we're always together.
And that was thrown in for pure camp value. Of course, that was the Andrews Sisters with Gay Caballeros from 1944. Some of you may remember actor Jack Weston in the hilarious drag version of that song in the 1976 movie The Ritz. In the 50s and especially the 60s, it seems the only gay presence in music was in songs where the singers were making fun of gay people, with results that were borderline homophobic. They somehow don't seem as offensive now as they probably were then. I put together a quick collage of several of these songs. The first is folk singer Casey Anderson singing one called Sweet Sydney. You'll recognize it immediately as a parody of the hit Big Bad John. That song was the natural inspiration of at least half a dozen parody variations, though in the others, our hero was given the stereotypical gay name of Bruce. Here's Sweet Sydney and Friends.
Every morning at the salon, you can see him arrive. 5'6", weighing 105. Narrow at the shoulders and broad at the hips, with a delicate smile on his painted lips. Sweet Sydney. Nobody knew where Sid called home. Had a place on Fire Island where he lived alone. A likable fellow, though kind of quiet and shy. And if he spoke at all, he just said, "Hi, sweetie."
Beats boys for sale or rent. I'll hum this song for 50 cents. White tennies and pink hairnets and black and gold tip cigarettes. But I'm a great big strong old handsome man. Barefoot boy with cheeks of tan. Cause I'm a man of means with tight jeans. Queen of the beach.
He uses powder, lipstick and paint. If you sneak behind him, he's liable to faint. A real live he-man is what he ain't. He's the queen of Fire Island. He walks along, hands on his hips. He likes to hang around those battleships. But when he sees a sailor, he twitches his lips. He's the queen of Fire Island. He's got dreamy eyes, curly hair. He just dyed it yellow. Doesn't smoke and doesn't swear. He's just a very nice fellow.
Strangers in the night, exchanging glances, wondering in the night, what were the chances we'd be sharing love before the night was through? Something in your eyes was so inviting. Something in your smile was so exciting. Something in my heart told me I must have you.
Homer, a happy little homosexual.
Sexual.
I do find that though he may be intellectual, his happy little feet have sweetheart. He's well adjusted. He goes cruising every night, wearing pants that are too damn tight.
Because he's Homer,
a happy little homosexual.
Sexual.
And though he may be very ineffectual, finds a fella every week. Take him dancing cheek to cheek. Homer, the happy little fag. Yeah, yeah.
Gee whiz. Homer, he's the king of men.
Oh, very king.
Okay. Who were those guys making fun of us? As I mentioned, the song Sweet Sydney was by Casey Anderson from 1962. In 1967, comedian Peter Dana did a parody of Roger Miller's King of the Road called Queen of the Beach. And from the 50s party album billed with the obvious fake name Saul T. Peter came the song Queen of Fire Island. In 1966, the duo Teddy and Darryl parodied a lot of songs on their album These Are the Hits, You Silly Savages, with the best one being their twisted Strangers in the Night. The only song with some gay legitimacy was the last one, Homer the Happy Little Homosexual. It came from the mysterious Camp Records label, which through the early 60s issued two albums and 1045s, which appeared to be more on our side in their humor. Now we're up to what I'm calling some 50 styles women's music. Beverly Shaw was a nightclub singer who moved to Los Angeles in the early 50s and performed at the Flamingo Club. And after several years, bought her own night spot, the Club Laurel, where she starred for almost 15 years, making it one of the most popular gay clubs in the city. Probably in the late 50s or early 60s, she issued her own album called Songs Tailored to Your Taste. From it, here's a bit of Secret Love.
Once I had secret love that lives in the heart of me. All too soon, my secret love became impatient to be free. So told a friend star the way the dreamers often do, just how wonderful you are and why, my darling, I'm so in love with you. From the highest hill, even told the ghost. and daffodil. At last my heart an open door, and my secret love's no secret anymore.
I chose the song Secret Love deliberately because it's one of those songs that were kind of adopted by gay people in those years, because we could identify with loves that had to be kept secret. One of the contemporaries of Beverly Shaw was Lisa Benn. Now, Lisa Benn is a pen name and is an anagram of the word lesbian. She's quite historic in her own right for producing the very first lesbian or gay publication in 1947 called Vice Versa. She's in her 80s now and lives in Los Angeles. About a year ago, when I was planning a trip there, I contacted her and requested an interview. She declined, saying she had gone into seclusion, but she did write me a nice letter back. I had specifically asked her about her memories of Beverly Shaw, and she told me of seeing her often and admiring her singing. Anyway, Lisa was at the Flamingo Club one night, and one of the female impersonators told a rude joke referring to Beverly Shaw. Lisa decided right then and there that she would write some parodies of popular songs and that they would be positive gay songs. So she did, and later performed some of them at that same club. In 1960, the lesbian organization Daughters of Bilitis released a 45 RPM record of two of these, and I'm very pleased to share with you one of these very rare songs, a parody of Frankie and Johnny.
Frankie and Johnny were lovers, lovers even how they could pass. Swore to stick to one another, just like two West postage stamps. He was his man, but he done him wrong. Frankie swished down to the gay bar to sip him some pink lemonade. Asked, has my Johnny been in here? Was he caught in last night's race? Oh, he's my man. Is he a-doing me wrong? The bartender said, listen, Frankie, I ain't gonna tell you no lies. Your John's got his maid with a piece of trade who is known as a Nelly Blythe. He's your man. Oh, honey, he's a-doing you wrong. Frankie went to the hotel, knelt down by the keyhole to spy. And sure enough, there was his John boy fooling round this other guy. He caught his man. He was a-doing him wrong. Frankie flew down to the gun shop, bought a pearl handle 44. Through the suit, cast his fickle through. He shot right through that door. He shot his man for doing him wrong. Frank was not much of a marksman, and that hotel door was shut. The bullets were meant for their cruel, cruel hearts, and they landed in their. But he shot his man for doing him wrong. Now this story has quite a moral, as you can plainly see. Plenty more fruit in the orchard, so go out and shake that tree. Don't shoot your man for doing you wrong. Never, never shoot your man.
Frankie and Johnny by Lisa Benn. I've got two more early 60s artists I want to slip in. One was a soul singer who performed mainly in the Toronto area and was known for his flamboyant, effeminate stage persona. His name was Jackie Shane, and he even had a top 10 hit in Canada with some lyrics that were fairly blatant for 1963 in his song called Any Other Way.
Here you come again. And you say that you're my friend, but I don't know why you're here. She wants to know how I feel.
any other way. People have been talking since we've been apart, and when I pass, I hear them whisper, "There he goes with a broken heart." But when you see my baby, here's what you say. Tell her I'll be happy any other way. That's all I got to say, my friend. Better say goodbye. I think you'd better go right now, or you might see me cry. But when you see my baby, this is what you say. Tell her I'll be happy any other way.
There were, of course, gay and lesbian artists who were successful, some who were fairly open, like Frances Fay, and a whole list of those who were quite closeted, like Johnny Ray, Kay Ballard, Tab Hunter, Johnny Mathis, and, of course, Liberace. Okay, unfortunately it's time to wrap up this show, but I want to pay a special thanks to Charles Cage. Charles is a collector friend of mine of many years, and he introduced me to many of the rare records you heard tonight. As always, if you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write to me at qmheritage@aol.com, and I wish you would. My site this month has a lot more information about this old music, along with rare photos of the artists and recordings. Also, in order to fit in as much of this music as possible into an hour's show, I had to use only shortened clips. You can hear a version of my show with more complete songs and a few extras on my site. It's at www.queermusicheritage.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston, and I'll be back on the fourth Monday of next month with the next installment of Queer Music Heritage. That'll be a special show featuring the winners of the 2004 Out Music Awards. I'm ending the show with an example of a song that was accidentally gay. It was by a very straight artist who happened to record a song that today sounds very campy and is a perfect closing song. From 1953, here's Perry Como with Keep It Gay.
Keep it gay, keep it light, keep it fresh, keep it fair. Let it bloom every night. Give it room, give it air.
Keep your love a lovely dream and never wake it. Make it happy and be happy as you make it. Let it sing like a nightingale in May. Keep it gay, keep it free, or you'll frighten it away. Take it easy and enjoy it while you take it.
Keep it gay, keep it gay, keep it gay.
You have been listening to Queer Voices. Heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
The White Rose Coalition will take part in a demonstration at the Rose Parade in Pasadena, California on New Year's Day 2008. Thousands of local and national pro-impeachment and pro-peace American citizens will stage nonviolent protests and demonstrations throughout the Rose Parade, beginning at 7:30 a.m. in Pasadena, California. The White Rose Coalition includes members of the Los Angeles National Impeachment Center, Code Pink, Troops Out Now Coalition, ANSWER, Progressive Democrats for America, and others. Tune in as part of the 50 to 80 million U.S. viewers and 500 million worldwide viewers take part in this historic protest. Go to bcimpeach.com for details or call 310-497-7255. That's bcimpeach.com or 310-497-7255. You're listening to 90.1 KPFT, Houston, Texas, Radio for Peace.
Listeners support KPFT in many different ways. Some write checks and others use credit cards. But if you're spinning your wheels looking for a tax deduction, think about donating your working but unwanted car, motorcycle, boat, or truck to KPFT. You'll qualify for a tax deduction and at the same time take care of that unfinished business.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.